Welcome, welcome. Episode 38 here of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. This is Chris Habas, as always, riding out solo again, continuing these Pacific Division previews. Got a great conversation coming up here with Nate Parham of Golden State of Mind. We're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors. We're also going to switch gears and talk a little bit about the WNBA playoffs. So roughly the 29-minute mark, we're going to switch gears and talk about the WNBA playoffs and start talking about the Phoenix Mercury and their potential, as well as the other eight teams, or I should say seven other teams, that are in the second season out there in the WNBA. So episode 38, not super significant in the grand scheme of things of the NBA in terms of the Phoenix Suns or the Golden State Warriors, or really any team in particular, from the from Mikey Moore to Kwame Brown. Not a lot of significance with the number 38, but you know, the number 38 is a pretty interesting number when you look at the different referential meanings of it. When you go back into mythological times with the Egyptian mythology, it is the characteristic number of Anubis, the jackal-headed god of death, as Wikipedia describes him, and the god of mummification. So let's go ahead and wrap up this podcast and get things started with Nate Parham of Golden State of Mind and Swish Appeal. Nate, how are you doing here today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you coming on. This is preview number three, I guess you can call it, in a series of four running down the Pacific Division. As I just said a moment ago, we've already talked Kings, we've talked Clippers, so we've gone from a team that's probably the favorite in the Pacific, and I don't think most people would disagree with the Clippers, to a team the Suns are going to be battling and the cellar there with the Kings. Now the Golden State Warriors. You guys win 47 games last year, not a franchise record or anything, not anything that, you know, jump into arms about like the Clippers did last year, but 48 wins, looked really good for stretches, looked kind of pedestrian for stretches, and then made your name in the playoffs. So with last season, has it all sunk in on how good this team can be and the great young talent you guys now have out there?
Sure. I mean, I think the key thing about last season, I think a lot of Warriors fans have to be honest with themselves about, and I actually think there was a similar feeling after the We Believe team, is that it's not entirely clear whether that group of players hit their peak last year. You know, you had a lot of players playing at about career high levels. You know, obviously there are a lot of young players. Steph Curry, I mean, the three-point shooting was just ridiculous last year. Landry and Jack both had amazing years. David Lee was an all-star. I mean, so we had a lot of things to go right for us. So I think there is still definitely a lot of excitement about the team. And as there should be, but I think it's hard to gauge exactly how, I mean, can they be better than that? Part of the answer is Andrew Bogut being healthy means they could definitely be better, but will all those different pieces fall into place the way they did last year? I mean, that was kind of a magical season, despite the fact that you're right, there were some pedestrian stretches there. It was still pretty remarkable to look back on.
Yeah, especially when the playoffs hit, because, I mean, the big-time series win, obviously, you guys had in the first round of the playoffs against the Denver Nuggets, which, honestly, I don't think many people saw coming. I mean, I was one of the guys on the bandwagon when the season begun, thinking that the Nuggets might have been the second-best team in the West and thought those guys had a legit chance of really challenging OKC, but, you know, injuries aside, you know, OKC wasn't really the barometer in the playoffs. But you guys get that huge win in that series against the Nuggets. You guys looked fantastic, and you start off strong against the San Antonio Spurs. Is that, like, you take with a grain of salt, or is that something where you look at it and you're proud that you got to that point and you're able to go blow for blow basically with San Antonio?
I think you have to be proud you got to that point. I mean, I think, you know, there was I remember talking to your colleague Dave King at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a legitimate question at the beginning of last year whether the Warriors make the playoffs at all. I mean, and so I think you look at getting to the second round again, you know, this only comes around like twice every two decades for this team right now. You know, you have to be excited about how far they got and optimistic about the future, certainly. They brought the core, obviously, we'll probably talk about the offseason, but you know, they brought most of the major pieces back and replaced them well, I think. So, you know, I think the Spurs series was, you know, you look at that game in San Antonio, they lost in overtime where they blew the big lead. I mean, that series, they were close to, you know, pushing that series to the limit if they had won, you know, if things had fallen their way. So, there's not much, I mean, it was amazing, it was magical. We'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, and now you shift gears from last year where, I mean, it's hard not to look back. Like you said, it's a lot of guys hit their peak, but there were a lot of young guys. So it's like they hit their peak to their basketball potential at that point, but their peak can still continue. I mean, Steph Curry can shoot better than what he shot. And, I mean, Harrison Barnes, he was Kobe Bryant coming out of high school, was, you know, just good, not great at North Carolina, but clearly fits this team very well for what they need as a guy that just stretches the floor and doesn't need to be great because they have Steph Curry. I mean, with that young backcourt trio, I guess you can say, if you want to consider Harrison Barnes the other part of it, you have Steph, you have Clay, you have Harrison Barnes. What is the ceiling for that group right there? Because it feels like they reach their peaks, but they also reach their peaks and they're all under 25.
I mean, I think with Curry, I think it'll be hard for him to match last season, like where he was shooting the playoffs and the three-point shooting record. I mean, that was just unreal. That'll be difficult to match. But, you know, with Barnes and Thompson, obviously Barnes, you know, Barnes was also, you know, up and down. He was kind of irrelevant in some games during the regular season. And I think he really, you know, when you look at where he, you know, if you're a Summer League fan, but if you look at where he started in Summer League and just where he was at the end of the season, I mean, he grew by leaps and bounds. I mean, it's rare to see, I mean, he had the reputation as a hard worker coming in, but you could see the improvement, especially in his handle, his confidence, not trying to do too much. You know, the knock against him in college was that he took so many ill-advised shots. And, you know, he was a low percentage shooter in large part because he was shooting a lot of shots and shooting a lot of off-balance shots. When he gets his feet set, he's getting in his spots in the mid-range or going to the basket, which he did more at the end of the year. I mean, he's a much more efficient scorer. I think that's what we saw in the playoffs. When suddenly he has a floor on him, I mean, it was obviously Denver struggled the entire series with him, and he gave San Antonio some problems as well. So I think with Barnes, it's kind of like we definitely don't know the ceiling. Thompson, I think the same thing. Thompson emerged last year as a defender, you know, as their top perimeter defender at times. You know, he was already taking the toughest assignment at times. And, you know, if he can continue to grow as a ball handler, which I think would help this team this year because of the loss of Jack, I mean, we're definitely looking at a trio of wing players who could be, if they can keep that trio together, Curry's on a reasonable contract, and just keep Barnes and Thompson together. I mean, that's going to be a tough trio to contend with for years to come.
Yeah, and when you look at Barnes, I mean, he's a guy that I've always thought when I saw him in college all the way to today that he's very, very much like, you know, about 20 years later, he's as much like Sean Elliott as any player probably is going to be in the sense that, you know, you don't want to give him the ball and tell him go create something, but if you run some sets for him and get him some mid-range jumpers, some threes, some cuts to the hoop, like he's going to score, and he can score very efficiently at times when he's not asked to do a lot. He's the wild card for this team, in my opinion, because they go out there in the offseason. Let's kind of talk about that a little bit. They go out in the offseason. They get Andre Iguodala, which was huge. I know that the team was kind of all in on Dwight Howard, but at the end of the day, if they had to sacrifice one of those three, or I should say one of the two, because they weren't going to give up Curry, but if they had to sacrifice Thompson or Barnes to get Dwight Howard, and then you have Iguodala, Howard, Curry, and then one of the two, then it's a little bit of a different unit. I think Barnes is the wild card because Iguodala's got to be expected to start. And then you look at this group, and all of a sudden you have Harrison Barnes now coming off of the bench. I mean, how much better does Andre Iguodala, just that acquisition by itself, how much does that make this team that much better of a team?
I mean, it's defense. I mean, that's the thing that's been plaguing this franchise and yours for years. And so, like, the idea of bringing in someone who can actually, you know, an actual elite defender at his position, obviously Bogut is regarded in a similar way but didn't play as much. But to have, like, an elite perimeter defender for this team, it helps in so many can defend so many positions. You know, you get someone who can play next to Curry, who can take the harder backcourt assignment if necessary. He can take when you're talking about, you know, Barnes coming off the bench. You know, I think that gives they can work the rotation game by game based on the matchups. I just think it gives Jackson a lot more flexibility. Also, I think the underrated thing is that, you know, Iguodala, although he has a bit of a turnover problem, he's a decent ball handler for his position. And so, again, that kind of gives us that look where we can take pressure off Curry to handle the ball so much, put Curry off the ball in some sets, have Iguodala set him up as well as Klay Thompson. I mean, I think Klay Thompson's growing in that regard. So I think it just makes the roster, I think it makes their offense that much more dynamic, and it gives them a look on defense. If Thompson continues to grow as a defender, have Iguodala out there, Barnes's, you know, defensive potential, in my opinion, is, you know, it's extremely high. I think he has all the tools to be a great defender athletically. You know, it's about, you know, him committing and learning the game, catching up with the speed of the game a bit. So I think it just makes the team it gives them a different look. And I think, you know, whether they go small a lot or they go big and how they divide up the minutes, that just gives you more options. And options are all you want in basketball if you want to go far.
Yeah, and now having Barnes under the tutelage of Iguodala is not only going to – it's just going to immensely kind of highlight what you just said there with his defensive potential. And I think that's a great point, is that Andre Iguodala now gets to be that secondary ball handler, and you get to see how lethal Stephen Curry can be when he's just running off of picks and running along baselines and driving defenses crazy, because they also got to keep their eye on Klay Thompson and when the team goes small with Harrison Barnes. So looking at the depth of this team, like when you start looking at depth charts and you start playing 2K14 game manager in your head, you kind of get a feel for what you think this team is going to look like. In your opinion, with the way that the coaching staff, which is again, they're kind of brand new themselves too, to an extent, looking at this group, do you feel like they're going to go small a lot, big a lot, or it's going to be situational?
I would have to think it's situational. I just think, you know, because you're going to have to put the players out there on the court and see how everything works. You know, the thing about, and also, again, last year, Bogut wasn't on the court for a lot of the year and not consistently. I mean, so what is that? What kind of look does that give you? You have Lee, you know, Lee obviously is only out for the playoffs, but now you have Lee back with Iguodala and Barnes as well. So, I mean, does going bigger serve them better? I think it's kind of, a wait-and-see thing to me. I would prefer to go small, actually, to be honest. I like that look. I think it serves Barnes because I think where he is in his development right now, I think his ball handling was a major weakness last year, and I think he's more confident with that ability to space the court, get situations where he can have a defender in space and find mismatches. And that suits him extremely well right now. I think it's going to be hard. How do you divide up the perimeter in minutes at all? They brought in Tony Douglas as well, who's going to be getting some perimeter minutes, at the guard spot. So it's just a lot to sort out.
Yeah, and I mean, and Barnes produced at the four position last year, mainly out of necessity, obviously with the injuries and whatnot, but I mean, he performed. I mean, the numbers weren't terrible with him at the four. He played pretty well. He's 6'8", long kid, extremely athletic, can kind of, you know, if he's out there and he's having to play the four for like 12 to 15 minutes a game, and, you know, in the playoffs, yeah, every now and then he's going to have to match up with like Zach Randolph and Tim Duncan and Blake Griffin and those folks, but it's not like he's guarding them all game and he's a four by nature. Right. They have that weapon in their back pocket, which I think can be lethal, especially when they get into a game against maybe like the Clippers, who want to speed the game up and they might go small themselves. Well, Golden State can kind of almost go blow for blow. They can go big, small, and traditional, and they have, you know, experience and talent at every position, which is kind of scary for this young team.
I think so, and I think, you know, if there are moments when a player goes through a slump or, you know, something just isn't working for a given matchup, I mean, they can tinker a little bit. You know, I think by the, you know, the danger in doing that is if you tinker too much. You know, when you have a situation where you have so many options that you're trying various options in the game, I think you can ruin the rhythm in a basketball game. But I think we'll have to see where they are, how the minutes break down. Like, if we come back after the All-Star break and even closer to the playoffs, like, what's actually working well on a consistent basis, I think will be interesting to see. I think it's really too tough to call to me right now.
Yeah, and looking at this team, like, I love the depth of what they're putting together, and I'm becoming a fan of this team just by looking over their roster and the numbers and everything. But the one thing that stands out, you mentioned Jarrett Jack before, and that's probably the biggest hole, because you have Tony Douglas and Kent Bazemore, Nemanja Nedovic, the player they drafted this year in the first round of the NBA draft, who might come over here. Obviously, Andre Iguodala helps with the secondary ball handling, but there's a difference between having a secondary ball handler and having a backup point guard, and Jarrett Jack was just critical to the success last season. How does that backup point guard position get handled, and how big of a weakness do you see that as?
Yeah, I think you have to start with how you feel about Jarrett Jack. You know, I think
that's true.
He was controversial among Warriors fans, and there were a lot of situations where, you know, you watch him play and you're just like, you know, it's the no, yes thing with Jarrett Jack a lot. So here's the thing. I think there were times when he could be a ball stopper. And I think when you look at all the weapons they have on offense, what the potential here is that the ball might move a little bit better with Jarrett Jack off the floor. I mean, that's just a one theory. So you can look at it that way. And if you think about Thompson improving his ball handling, hopefully, and Iguodala being in the system as well, if they just keep the ball moving when they go small and keep working the pick and roll with Curry and Lee, this could work out. You know, the downside is that there is a lot of uncertainty. Nedovic is for most of us an unknown commodity at this level. Tony Douglas is, you know, a great defender, but, you know, can sometimes be an unreliable ball handler. And then Bazemore, I love Bazemore, how can you not? But, again, it's just a guy who doesn't have as much experience. So, yeah, I think it's going to be something that works out, but I'm also confident that, again, by the end of the year, they'll find an option. I think Iguodala is going to be a legitimate answer, personally. And with Douglas being able to come in and defend quicker guys, I think they'll be fine. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly, when you look at their roster, it's certainly a question mark.
Yeah, and when you have, like, the LeBrons of the world and these guys where you don't need to be the point guard to be the primary ball handler, it's like having that possession quarterback with an elite running back where you don't need to have that. You know, you can have your Andre Iguodala run the offense with, like you said, Tony Douglas defending. And, I mean, how can you – that's something – I think the thing that I'm most excited about this team, and nobody else will be on this bandwagon except for me and maybe a few of the cats from EuroLeague Adventures that I talked to, but the Nedovic-Bazemore backcourt potential off the bench – I'm so excited for just that athletic potential to see them in NBA games and just to watch those guys play. Because, I mean, 6'4", athletic Nedovic, I mean, he's not a normal international prospect. And then Bazemore he's coming into his own as an NBA player the past year. I'm stoked for that backcourt match or that backcourt combination if they get on the court at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And you've added yourself as a true hoops junkie, apparently, which is fine. but yeah, I mean, Bazemore, I did go down to Santa Cruz a few times to watch Bazemore last year when he played down there. And I think, you know, I think he's a player who his length can cause problems, you know, for defensively. And then Nedovic can defend at the NBA level, again, is a question. You know, I think you're still looking at guys who they have options at the forward as well. They have a number of guys they can plug in to give them a few quality minutes to give their starters a rest and who might be able to not lose ground in a game. And I think that's kind of what I'm hoping for their bench. Obviously, that's I don't know if that they'll have the obvious Jarrett Jack kind of real finisher like he was last year. A lot of the times he was the guy who could put the ball in his hands and let him go. I don't know if they'll have that off the bench in the same way this year, but I'm confident that something one of these guys, one of these young guys, will pan out. And Bazemore defensively is going to be an impact player. You have to believe that. Nedovic, we'll see. Sometimes it takes an adjustment to come over from Europe and come here and play ball. So we'll see.
Yeah. It'll be definitely be an adjustment period. But he's been a guy covering the NBA draft that I've been the most excited about for the past 2 to 3 years. Actually, come over from the international waters and come play in the NBA just for his style and the way he plays. He was dubbed as the international Russell Westbrook for the past couple of years. So,
Eric Rose as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean that's some pretty high praise. I mean, I'm calling Harrison Barnes Sean Elliott. So let's get some more appropriate comparisons going, guys. But I mean, so like with that group there, serious question here, though, is does this team, we just mentioned like the hodgepodge that they have in the backcourt of talented players, but not really a go-to name like Jarrett Jack. Does this team need Stephen Curry insurance at this point?
I think any Warriors fan that says no would be lying to themselves. I mean, I think that ankle, I mean, the way in which he tweaks the ankle, which is oftentimes like walking forward. I mean, it's scary. I mean, you never know. He could land wrong. He could walk wrong. He could shoot a jumper and land wrong. I think, so you do need some kind of insurance. They have options. So I think they're probably going into the season thinking they'll fill it by committee if that happens. But you know, you're right. It's a wild card. I mean, it's like there was just a number of wild cards on this team and that you can't really give legitimate answers for. I feel like you do need someone. Jarrett Jack was there to say, yes, we can put him in at point guard and feel relatively comfortable. But, you know, again, would Jarrett Jack have gotten to, like, let's say Curry was out for a long period of time. Do you really want Jarrett Jack filling in for Steph Curry? I mean, can anybody really fill in for Steph Curry? Not really. So if that happens, they're going to have to change the way they do things. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how a group like Iguodala, Thompson, your boy Nedovich, or Douglas or Bazemore can come in and make that work.
I don't mind being associated with Nedovich as him being my boy, because I've actually had that told to me numerous occasions.
I'm not even teasing you like that. It's just funny to me.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan. So I want to close out the Warriors on a couple of quick things. So let's go into the Wayback Machine, and not really that far way back, actually. Let's go into the Wayback Machine, and the trade happens. The Suns have Stephen Curry. You guys have Amari Stoudemire. Where are the Warriors at today?
Oh, God. Wow. That is a good question. You know what wouldn't have happened? I think what wouldn't have happened is the trade for Bogut, and because Ellis would have stayed probably. So you would have had Ellis and Stoudemire. And I think that trade was pretty important to the direct. It's pretty important to our confidence in this team going forward to have that center there. I think they probably would have gotten back to the playoffs sooner. I just have to believe that with Ellis and Stoudemire. But you know, Ellis is kind of depends on what you think of low efficiency scorers, and Stoudemire obviously has kind of fallen off. Obviously, he's fallen way off since leaving Phoenix. So would they have gotten to the playoffs sooner? Possibly, but I think they'd be in a worse place now had they made that trade. And I say that totally in retrospect, because when it didn't happen on draft day, I was pissed. Like many other people, I wanted that to happen. Hindsight, I think it was the best thing to happen.
Yeah, when it didn't happen, ironically, both cities were pissed when it didn't happen, because the Suns fans out here and the Suns media were just excited. They were just outside their mind ecstatic. And I talked to Steve Kerr last summer, and he said they called. This is just the most mind-blowing thing to me in the world. And the fact that Steve Kerr is sitting on TNT right now, not running a team, is that he looked at Steph Curry between his freshman and sophomore year, and they basically sarcastically called him Black Steve Nash. Between freshman and sophomore year, and they were tracking him from then, and in the anticipation of him coming into a draft and wanting to get into like that top five range, 5 to 7 range, to be able to make sure they can get him. And you know, it almost came true. They almost were able to grab him for that Amari Stoudemire trade. It didn't go through. Now, we did throw you a bone, and we gave you but you guys were able to acquire this offseason another former high school to the NBA standout, great power forward back in his heyday. And you guys got Jermaine O'Neal. He brings along with him Lindsey Hunter onto the coaching staff. So a lot of retreading is happening in the Pacific Division. What do you think about those two acquisitions in terms of Jermaine being basically kind of like Bogut insurance? I don't know if he's the backup when you consider like Festus Ezeli and David Lee and all the different options they have there in the front court. But what did you think about those two acquisitions?
Well, you know, I liked the Jermaine O'Neal acquisition quite a bit. I think simply because his numbers, you know, people look at the games he missed last year with Phoenix, and obviously, you know, more about what happened in Phoenix than I do even. But I think when you look at his numbers last year, it looks like he missed a lot of games, and people think he was injured a lot, but he wasn't. He took time off, right, for a family reason.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
I think, you know, if he can come in and provide that defensive presence while Azili's out, and even when Azili's back, I mean, there's no guarantee that Azili will bump him in the rotation. But if he can give a few minutes here and there, I think he's probably in the 15 to 20 minute range producer at this point in his career to be effective on the playoff squad. You know, if he can do that for us, I think that would be great. And I think a lot of times people get into free agency and they want the big splashy free agent. And we obviously they got that with Iguodala. They got a big name. But I think, you know, the moves that they've been doing lately, like the little moves, like the Jermaine O'Neal, picking up Festus Ezeli last year at the end of the first round, getting Draymond Green, who we haven't talked about yet, but who I think is a player who defensively, obviously, they had a lot of faith in last year. And I think when you talk about turning the culture around and bringing in a defensive culture, Ezeli, Draymond Green is probably part of that.
Question is, in all honesty, looking at this with a small ball lineup potential for this team, is Draymond Green not the guy that's kind of phased out, though, when you look at this roster, the way it's coming together?
I mean, I think he's definitely the guy that's going to be phased out. When you think about minutes and you think about space as well, if you have the choice, because the thing is, he is a tweener. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to get 25 minutes and be, you know, all sophomore team or whatever, but he's, I think what he offers is, he's a high IQ player. He plays defense. And if he can knock down threes, which he was doing in the playoffs, I mean, that's a huge asset on the bench. I think it's just, they just have a number of assets there, I think, on the bench that can help fill that four position if necessary. Green being undersized, but space there. They can play with the combinations with once Bogut, Lee, and Azili are all on the court together. I mean, I think you have options there for them, and I think that's again, the big key. But with quarterback Shaquille O'Neal, defensively, if he can just bring that defensive presence, that defensive post presence, I think they'll be in a great position because that was, it was a problem. If Bogut goes out and Azili, Bogut's supposedly healthy, but, with Azili out, no one really wants David Lee at the five. So if we could have O'Neal there while Azili's out, that's great.
Yeah, no, I would definitely think that. And because, with Draymond Green, I'm probably speaking for every Phoenix Suns fan out here that we would take 60% of the guys that you guys have on your bench, and we'd love to have them on our bench or a combination of on the bench or starting. That's just being honest with it when you kind of look at the things and the way things are kind of shaping out. So, all right, last Warriors question, then we'll jump into a little WNBA because it's too easy to talk basketball, and I always end up running long. But when you look at the Warriors, they win 47 last year. Right now, with ESPN's composite and the things that they're doing, putting together their prediction for the forecast, they have the team 3 more wins at 50, 6th in the West, in that hodgepodge of Houston, Memphis, Golden State, Denver, which I think is going to be a genuine hodgepodge. Where do you see Golden State falling in the grand scheme of things out West, and what's your prediction on the wins? Is it 50 or is it over under that?
I think it's going to be under 50. I think it's going to be similar to last year, actually. And again, here's the reason. I think they did have some losses, obviously. They're going to have some growing pains with this new combination, I think. They started off pretty well last year, then hit a dip, and then came on, kind of eased in the playoffs, and they got hot in the playoffs. So I think it's really easy to get caught up in what happened in the playoffs and feel really, really optimistic about this team. I just think that I'm tempering expectations, which you learn to do as a Warriors fan. And, if they can get in that 48-250 range, which I think is reasonable, if they can get a 60, it's going to be tough this year in the West. It was tough last year, and it's going to be tough this year. A number of teams improved. Houston, obviously, is going to be a totally different team. We'll see what happens with, I don't think there's any, obvious team that will leapfrog them, necessarily. I think they'll have what it takes. I think Bogut gives them a different dimension. But six would be, getting back to the sixth seed, to me, would be considered success. I feel very good about that. I think that's, if they can play, be more consistent during the regular season and have all those be healthy into the playoffs, they'll have a shot to make it, to repeat, to get back as far as they did and maybe make it to the conference finals if they're lucky with the team they have. But I think six is, a reasonable expectation.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if they finish lower than that, honestly. I'm kind of preparing myself for a letdown this year a little bit.
Yeah, and you know what? And the West is stacked. No one's going to argue with that because Russell Westbrook is healthy now, so let's not forget that. It's like the West is legitimately stacked. So I don't know whether to applaud your realism and your honesty on that take, because most people would be like, oh, we're winning 60 and we're taking the cake like that. Yeah. Or to fear your skepticism, because it's almost like indoctrinated into teams that are not good for long stretches or for their entire franchise history, where you just have that built-in skepticism. So I'm not sure whether to applaud you or be a little fearful of that. Let's switch gears. So Golden State of Mind is for the Warriors, and I appreciate the takes on that team and kind of looking forward to what they're doing. Now we're going to switch gears to the WNBA for Suns fans that may not be that interested in that. That's kind of up to you. But the WNBA playoffs, they're starting. We have a team in Phoenix in the Mercury that I'm sure that they jumped up and down and danced when they learned that they were 3, not 4 in the seedings because of what Minnesota did to them this season. But out West, what are your thoughts here out West? Is it destined for a Minnesota LA confrontation, or do you think that there can be some mix-ups there?
Well, I think yes, Minnesota will advance. I am a Storm fan, however, I don't see that. I don't see Minnesota being stopped by them. So Minnesota will be advanced. The thing about Phoenix, and you mentioned that some bright side of the Sun fans readers might not be into WNBA, but I think this is probably a pretty good time to try watching. I think obviously you have Griner, but that team is maybe stacked to their detriment. I mean, I think they still need to figure some things out. And my feeling with the Mercury against the Sparks is they have much bigger wings than the Sparks do. And the question is, who's going to guard Tarazi, Taylor, Bonner? I'm not sure how the Sparks are going to match up defensively. And then, you know, and this is also going to be one of the first times of the season that the Mercury are going to be entirely healthy, because they didn't play that last Sparks game at full health. So I think the Mercury have a good chance to advance to the Western Conference Finals, actually. I think the issue still comes down to defense for them. They obviously had a brief honeymoon period with Pennell, and then they kind of, you know, dipped off a little bit. It still seems like they have some focus issues sometimes. But the Sparks, there are a lot of questions about how that backcourt guards big backcourts. And I think if Phoenix can take advantage of that, Taylor came back and she's effective. She's not setting the world on fire with her numbers, but she's doing the little things that Phoenix needs her to do in order to win. And yeah. I think it's a favorable matchup for Phoenix, I think. I think the Sparks had some serious holes this year. And I think they obviously had a lot of talent. And Phoenix started off so slow that it was hard. They didn't challenge the Sparks. But I think we don't really know what to expect from this Mercury team. I think they're a bit of a wild card.
Yeah, no, and I can definitely see that. And the funny thing is, like, when I started doing the research on Sparks versus Mercury in terms of, like, the talent that they have, it's pretty incredible that technically the Sparks have more former top three type talents on their roster than the Mercury do. When you look at the Mercury, you think of them as being, like, the just elite stacked team. But, I mean, with this matchup, like you said, it comes down to, like, I think the Mercury can actually match punch for punch to an extent the front court of the Sparks, which is their biggest strength. Then you look at the back court and you have Diana Taurasi, which, if you want to get into GOAT conversations, you can. You know, she's someone that is a huge difference maker. And the fact that now they can go from having either Sammy Perhalis or, you know, Jasmine James or, you know, whoever it is starting at the point guard is kind of just like a throw in. Now you have Diana back at the point. You have Penny Taylor back there. You have Dawana Bonner. You now have a lot of length, a lot of size, a lot of shooting, a lot of playmaking. It's definitely a wild card team. I mean, Minnesota handed it to them all season. They were 0-5 against Minnesota. They destroyed them all season, but they were 2-2 against the Sparks, and that last game was a complete throwaway, as much as they won't admit to it. I mean, the Mercury did not show up for that game, but Pennell was cracking up and laughing on the bench while they were down by 25 and in the third quarter, and, I mean, it definitely wasn't a game that I don't think either team took super serious. Obviously, the Sparks took it a little more serious.
I mean, I think the Sparks have some major lapses. I think they needed to... They need to go in the playoffs with some confidence and knowing who they are a little bit. I think Parker is a good example. You know, Parker is obviously, you know, arguably one of the top players in the league. Some people would argue the top player in the league, but you know, Parker, when she gets into this mode of settling for jump shots, they really struggle. You know, when she goes to the basket and she's in the post, she'll dominate almost any opponent in the post. But, you know, she can start selling for jump shots. If Tolliver gets into a funk, you know, if there's a center, if there's an opposing center who can bully them inside, which I don't think Griner is quite yet at all. I think Griner is going to be much better than she was this year. You know, Sparks can struggle, and they could even struggle at home. They've been good at home this year. But it's not inconceivable to imagine Phoenix going in there and getting a game on the road and pulling a – something in an upset based on the way the season turned out, but being where we expected them to be, right? So we'll see what happens. I'm excited for it. I feel like it's the one series where I don't really have a good feel for, because the Mercury are such a wild card and the Sparks can come out. The Sparks, when they come out flat, I mean, they come out dead flat. I mean, losing to the Storm, all, you know, the shock taking them to overtime games. I mean, they can lose to anybody when they're in a funk. So I think, you know, sometimes I think their stock is a little bit too inflated, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, it says something when you go to the WNBA homepage and all game threes are to be determined, Whereas the Sparks Mercury game has a day, a time, and a national channel that it's on. So I think most people think that this is going to be a very good series. I mean, with the Sparks and the Mercury, it could go either way. I mean, I would sound like a homer because I've covered the team and I've been at all their home games the past two seasons for Bright Side of the Sun. So, I mean, I've been at all their home games and I know what they can do. And the thing that you mentioned with Parker, I think it's ironic because that's the first thing that pops in my head with her. And that's something the Mercury do to her quite often, is they force her into being a jump shooter a lot, which I don't understand why. But every time she plays against them, they get her into that position, and then they always find a way to frustrate Tolliver to an extent. And that's just what Anna does. Diana frustrates pretty much everybody and gets frustrated a lot herself. But so switching over, we're both in agreement that it's Minnesota, and then you can kind of flip a coin with the Sparks and the Mercury with that one. Then you have the Sky, who have Deladon, who's absolutely outstanding this year, against the defending champs in one series, and then you have the Dream and the Mystics in the other series. I mean, is this basically, you know, just running the, you know, just kind of running through things to get the Sky to the championship, or do you see a surprise team?
You have to remember that, you know, the Sky went 1-3 against the Fever this year.
True.
Both teams were injured, and now the Fever are, you know, different than the Mercury, but similar in that, you know, they have their full team now. They have their full roster with Douglas coming back. So, to me, you know, if there was an upset pick I felt most strongly about, I actually feel pretty strong about the Fever being able to upset the Sky.
Wow.
And because it wasn't a fluke. I think what happens with the Sky a lot, they obviously have Fouls in there. Again, tons of talent with Foul, Deladon, and Prince. The thing with them, though, is they fall into the trap of playing a lot of one-on-one ball. And they're not in shooting a lot of jump shots. And Deladon, obviously, I think should be the unanimous rookie of the year, barring some strange homer from somewhere picking someone else. But I think, you know, she's a jump shooter. Prince is a jump shooter. And when they get into that mode of shooting jump shots, they don't get the ball into fouls, which is a far more efficient scoring option. And the Fever and Lynn Dunn are just a team that will take advantage of that. I mean, they'll force them into into places of less efficiency. I don't want to call Deladon a weakness. She's not. But if you can take Sylvia Fowles out of the game by simply limiting her touches, which is what they do, bothering Vandersloot at the top at the point guard, and limiting Fowles' touches, you can do that. And that's what the Fever do to teams. They frustrate them defensively. Even if it's not creating turnovers, they play a disciplined defense. And with Douglas back, depending on how she plays, that gives them an additional, similar to what we were talking about with a little bit similar. Similar to what we're talking about the Warriors and Klay Thompson type. You know, Douglas can be that player who can, she's a decent defender at times, and she can handle the ball. And that gives them a different dimension as well. So the Fever could pull off the upset. I don't want to book Chicago's ticket just yet. but then if the Fever were to get by Chicago, getting by Atlanta or Washington for the Fever, I think, is not unreasonable. So we could end up seeing a rematch to me of Minnesota, Indiana. But if you are a betting man, and I'm not, I mean, clearly the Chicago Sky are probably the better bet. Like, I don't see Washington or Atlanta beating the Sky necessarily. Atlanta's been really down in the second half of the season after their hot start. And Washington's just wildly inconsistent, probably one of the most inconsistent teams in the league this year. So I think, you know, Chicago, Indiana could end up being the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that would be my prediction, but I don't think it's a very strong one because everybody thinks Chicago's going anyway. I could see the upset there happening with the Fever.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff, though, and that's someone that actually watches the game. So second to last question, and then we'll get you out of here. Is there legitimately only one great team in the WNBA this year, considering what kind of what we just scoped through with the eight teams in the playoffs?
Yes, I would say so. I think it's Minnesota to me. I think they not only have all the weapons that, you know, all these other teams we're talking about. Chicago has a ton of weapons. Phoenix has a ton of weapons. LA has a ton of weapons. Minnesota is the only team that I think has they've hit a perfect chord with a balance. You know, those weapons really complement each other. And I think that, you know, Phoenix has, would Phoenix be better with a true point guard? Possibly. Would LA be better with a larger guard who could defend, or Tolliver coming off the bench? Possibly. In Chicago, you know, I just kind of, their issues are sort of more about offensive style, but I think Minnesota is the only one that has figured out, and we're talking three straight seasons now, and they could make the finals for three straight seasons, which is, even if they didn't win the finals last season, that's, in WNBA terms, that's pretty much a budding dynasty, you know, and if they could win it this year, which I think is very possible, I think everybody wants to hype up the new players and the new teams, but Minnesota is my favorite, has been my favorite to win it since the beginning. So I think they're the only elite team right now. I think they're in a class of their own for sure.
Yeah, and this, the WNBA, all things considered, has basically been a dynasty league.
Yeah.
And basketball in general has always felt like a dynasty sport, but definitely a dynasty league. And with what they got, I mean, Maya Moore, Simone Augustus, Lindsay Whalen, just to name off their three primary guy, players out there, tons of talent that fall in line underneath there and kind of play their role and do what they need to do. So I'm going to counter you a little bit, and I'm going to say, I know that I'm recording this out of a Phoenix website here, but I'm gonna go ahead and say Minnesota. Just even if Phoenix gets there, they had their lunch taken from Minnesota five times this year.
Right.
So I'm going to go Minnesota-Chicago just to be, sure, you know, the guy that clearly just picks the favorites, obviously. But yeah. And then with you, it sounds like you're leaning towards...
I'm probably leaning towards... I really feel strongly about Indiana, but I think that's kind of a risky pick. But I'll say Minnesota, Indiana for here.
Yeah, that's really different because we're going head-to-head right there.
We'll see what shows up on Swisher feel like. But,
yeah, exactly.
I look at things, so don't hold me to that, but I think I have a feeling about Indiana that they could pull off the upset, and I don't see anything stopping them.
Yeah, I mean, and that team was a shell of themselves towards the end of the year. I know Phoenix picked up a win against them out here, and I mean, it was just, you watch them play, and you're like, this isn't a team that won a championship. Oh, that's right, they're missing like three or four of their top players.
Exactly.
So yeah, definitely a different-looking team. So Golden State Warriors, you feel like they are right on par with last year. WNBA, great talk there. Where can people read you, find you on Twitter? How can they contact you and check you out, Nate?
Sure. On Twitter, you can get me at NateP_SBN. And for Warriors stuff, you know, once the Pacific Division starts up, GoldenStateOfMind.com. And for the WNBA, SwishAppeal.com. And, yeah, WNBA, and also we do women's college basketball. So I'm a Pac-12 fan. So any Arizona State fans, Arizona fans, definitely come by.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's the number one pick this year for the WNBA?
I think you have to go with Sinead Wimake right now, Stanford. And I think it's going to be hard to counter her. 6'4", power forward, extremely athletic. She's different than her sister. She's not the same kind of necessarily low post player. Someone compared her to Sophia Young a few years ago, and when she was like a freshman. And, you know, I think it's similar style, but 6'4". And a 6'4 Sophia Young is frightening. So I think she'll be a solid player in the league. And I'll be interested to see where she lands and what they do with her. But I think she's the clear number one.
Let's just get her on Tulsa. I mean, I know that they got a real good point guard. Let's just get her on Tulsa and get some talent on that team and have them competing. Let's just do that.
There you go.
All right, Nate. Well, again, appreciate the time, and we'll be catching up with you throughout the WNBA playoffs, I'm sure, on Twitter, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks a lot, Nate.
Again, that was Nate Parham from Golden State of Mind / Swish Appeal. So Pacific Division fans on Bright Side, you know, the Golden State Warriors, the team that has Stephen Curry that's not the Phoenix Suns, you know, definitely go out there, check out what they're doing, you know, keep up with that team. Legitimately a team that can make some waves out in the West, but like we said, super deep in the West, and not as poor at the bottom versus being as heavy in the West. So the Golden State Warriors have more competition for their end goal of winning a championship than the Phoenix Suns might have at their end goal of having, you know, the best available talent in the 2014 NBA draft. So that'll do it. That's episode 38. We got one more preview going up for the Pacific Division. There's only one more team that's left. That's the Los Angeles Lakers. So we'll definitely you know, get those guys on next week, and we'll talk to the Lakers and kind of see where everything's at with them and that team and that just mess of a drama that they got going out there in LA. But that is it for Chris Habas, Bright Side of the Sun podcast here for the Phoenix Suns. Check you guys out next week for episode 39. Appreciate the listen, share, tell a friend, and we'll be back next week with another edition of the podcast. Let's